We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show here on your home for Sporting KC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and what a show we have for you today. Not only will we be talking about the first place in the Western Conference, Sporting Kansas City, and their epic win at Atlanta last week, we will also be previewing their matchup in the Western Conference at Minnesota United coming up this weekend, but we are coming to you from Pinnacle, what was formerly known as the National Training Center in Western Wyandotte County, where there's been all sorts of news today. Just across the highway over on the other side of 435 at Children's Mercy Park earlier today, there were two major announcements: the Gold Cup coming to Kansas City in the summer of 2019, and the women's national team coming to Sporting Kansas City, to Children's Mercy Park, this summer for the Tournament of Nations as well. We're going to have an interview with the head coach of the United States women's national team, Jill Ellis. We're also going to have an interview with Sporting Kansas City president and CEO Jake Reed as we talk about all those announcements. But plus, here at Pinnacle today, the ribbon cutting ceremony for this facility. Look, we've been inside this facility for a while now, but this is the big ribbon cutting ceremony tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun here. And as I'm joined, as always, by El Jefe Carter Augustine, this has been and will continue to be a really fun day out here, Carter.
Yeah, it has been. It's been a great day. A great day for Kansas City soccer. We're tucked away in Pinnacle in one of the many little rooms you can break off in, and there's just so much functionality about this place. And really cool to be here for the ribbon ceremony, the grand opening, if you will. Like you said, it's been open for a little bit. Stuff has been happening, but finally getting to really inaugurate this wonderful facility here. And along with that, like you said, the two announcements from Children's Mercy Park today, which I think Pinnacle had a lot to do with in bringing those events here. Like you said, the women coming this summer for a really wonderful tournament with Japan, Brazil, and Australia, and the USA-Japan game, which I think is probably the pick of the bunch there, mm-hmm. is here mm-hmm. at Children's Mercy Park. So that was really exciting news. And then Gold Cup next summer. So yeah, it's been a great day.
Well, and let's start with that announcement on the women's side of things. Look, I think you and I, and anybody that's listening to this show, we're soccer nerds. I think we're all feeling the pang of when all these rosters are being announced for the Men's World Cup this summer. It's just that next reminder that we're missing out on the biggest soccer party on the calendar every 4 years by not having the United States in the Men's World Cup. So I'm looking for something. I'm looking for some things to get excited about. And this women's tournament coming to Kansas City, or at least one of the three sites for this competition coming to Kansas City, is one I know my kids are incredibly excited to come to this. And as you said, the matchup against Japan, I mean, that's befitting of a World Cup final. The World Cup on the women's side is just a year away as well, by the way. So I'm very excited about this, and I'm really hoping we get a great crowd and a great turnout in July when that comes to Kansas City.
Yeah, the World Cup next summer, but maybe we shouldn't look too forward ahead to that. Three of the teams at this tournament can. Brazil, Australia, and Japan have already all qualified, but the U.S. have to qualify in October. So that's something that is also very exciting about this tournament, is it's really the last tune-up for this U.S. women's team as they try and qualify for the World Cup. So there's going to be some really tough roster decisions, I think, for Jill Ellis, as there always is with this powerhouse of a program. They've had a lot of injuries, and this summer I think they have to really tie some things together. So, and as you mentioned, what there's not a better opponent than Japan, I think, to try and test yourself out against. So I think I'm just really excited for that tournament as well.
And sadly, I guess we don't need any reminders that we can't just take the qualification process as a fait accompli. Exactly. On the men's or women's side. So that's going to be a big time summer and fall coming up on the women's side. Now, when it comes to the Gold Cup, that's coming to Kansas City in the summer of 2019. That's going to be the first real start to me of the next iteration of this United States men's national team. I would think we're looking at a young team that's going to try to build up and gear up. Hopefully by that time next summer, we have a clearer picture of who's running U.S. soccer from the head coaching and this general manager standpoint as well. We don't know yet whether or not Kansas City is going to be hosting the United States in that competition. Of course, it could be any of the other teams from CONCACAF as well. I'm going to be very positive and optimistic and say we're going to see the United States here. But that's going to be, to me, a big competition just because it's going to be the start of that next process of putting a team together for the next World Cup, make sure we don't miss out on the next one.
Well, yeah, I think it's one of the first competitive matches that that U.S. men's team will have since being knocked out of this World Cup. So, yeah, I'm right there with you. But the level of CONCACAF is raising as well, and we've seen some decent Gold Cup games here in the past. I think, was it Jordi Delem's the kid from Martinique, and he came through here with Martinique at one point. So you never know with MLS having such a big reach in the Caribbean and Central America that you never know. These guys might show up on an MLS pitch here soon, too. So obviously, yeah, I'm with you. I'm more excited about what the U.S. does, but hopefully we get a U.S. game here in Kansas City. I would think so, but that's not confirmed until later on this fall. But if we don't, there'll still be some really good matches. It's a wonderful tournament, and as we just talked about, it's really the first time that we'll get to see the U.S. playing some competitive matches in that tournament.
Well, you sure, as we're here at Pinnacle as well, you sure hope that with U.S. soccer representatives checking out the facility, that just gives you one more leg up when it comes to the U.S. actually coming here. Because, look, we're going to talk with Jake Reed about this, but when it comes to this Tournament of Nations on the women's side, the Gold Cup coming here, there's a facility right across the street from Children's Mercy Park where all of the teams that come here can train simultaneously without crossing over with one another. I would sure think the United States would want to be a part of that. So we'll hope we'll find out later. I think in September, Rob Thompson told us we'll find out what teams are actually coming here for the Gold Cup. All right, let's transition over to Sporting Kansas City. I'll also point out that coming up later on in the show, we're going to talk with Cal Williams, our old buddy who was once the play-by-play voice of Sporting KC. He's now the play-by-play voice of Minnesota United. So he's going to help us preview that matchup, Sporting KC and Minnesota. Minnesota's been struggling a lot lately. But nobody needs to remind Sporting KC or their players that they lost twice there last year. And those results were massive when it came to Sporting KC's standings in the Western Conference by the end of the season. So we know it's going to be a challenge going up there. We'll talk more about that with Cal in a little bit. We got to spend some time reliving the awesome game / atmosphere / result that we saw down at Atlanta. Yeah, it was a full week ago tonight. Sporting had the weekend off to kind of cool their heels and watch all the other action in MLS, but we're still kind of basking in the glow of what was a phenomenal night in Atlanta, Georgia last week.
Yeah, very much so. It's tough to believe that a week has gone by because you kind of got the weekend off to cool off, but yeah, that was just a fantastic game from start to finish. It was really fun to watch. I think at halftime we're sitting there going, how is this 0-0 still? Mm-hmm. But there's still so much in it, and it's so exciting to watch, and what a huge result for Sporting. And after the game, Peter Vermees called Atlanta United. He compared them to the 99 Rams. He said they're the greatest show on turf. Mm. It really felt like that, being down their field side with that turf. They're so quick. That front four, so unbelievably quick. And I just don't think there's going to be many teams that go in there and get a point off Atlanta United in Atlanta this year. So that's just a huge bonus for Sporting Kansas City. They really took advantage, didn't they, of the 10-man. You know, so that doesn't always transpire. And so they knew at halftime they had a really golden opportunity to take 3 points out of a really tough place to play.
Yeah, in the first 15 minutes of the game or so, Atlanta United was just throwing punches left and right. They could have easily scored a goal. Obviously, it was called back for offside. They had a couple of other chances with good saves by Tim Melia, a couple of really key blocks by Aiko Parra as well. And you thought to yourself at that time, Sporting KC's not going to hold these guys out. But I did think that Sporting found their footing after that, and it started to become more of an even game. I expected an up-and-down game because one of the reasons Atlanta United are so dynamic is they throw numbers forward. They're not too worried about, you know, keeping players back. And that is part of what led to the penalty for Sporting Kansas City, was that the match was so open.
Yeah, it was very open. And
I said penalty. I should say red card. It was a foul just outside of the penalty area. But the red card that changed the game because of the game was so open.
Yeah, it was so open. And Sporting hits him on a lightning quick counter. It's a wonderful ball from Quaze. it really was an important pass, maybe the biggest of the game. And Kyrie Shelton gets there just ahead of Guzan. It's a huge moment in the game. And that's to the other point is, you know, Atlanta didn't start the game with 10 men. They were forced down to 10 men mm-hmm. through good play from Sporting on the counter. And they caused a split second decision from the goalkeeper, and he made the wrong decision. And so, or at least he was half a second late. And so they forced the sending off. And like you said, that was through just the game being open and Atlanta pouring numbers forward. It's just quickly that the ball from Kwaze is so good. Shelton makes the run, and good for him. He gets there just ahead as well. So that spoke to how good the game was, and then Sporting took advantage of it as well.
I'm going to take a moment to give a shout out to Elie, who was your pregame interview subject in that game. His pass to Kwaze set up the entire action, and I'm not taking anything away from the pass by Kwaze, but that pass from Elie, that's what we always talk about, how important that pivot is for Sporting Kansas City, transitioning the ball from defense to offense. Elie, under pressure, sends it through to Kwaze in a position where he can pick his head up with space and find that pass, and Elie ends up completing 94% of his passes in that game, 72 passes overall, and that was by far more than any other player on the field that day. That pass maybe doesn't make the highlight reel because it's the pass that leads to the pass. But I think sometimes we've almost forgotten about Elie this year because there's so many other superlatives to watch on this team. He was such a steady presence last year for Sporting Kansas City, and he continues to be so this year.
Yeah, and I think he took a couple smart fouls in the game as well. Just the nature of the position, isn't it? You get kind of lost. You don't really make the stat sheets when you're the number six, the holding midfielder. But you're right, the pass to the pass, the hockey assists, mm-hmm. so important. I think even statisticians are starting to get more on board with keeping track of that particular play because you're right, it made the goal. And I think he padded the numbers a little bit, what with it being down to 10 men. He's able to complete the passing, but you still have to do it. And that was how Sporting, I thought, held on to the lead. The last 10 minutes, Atlanta came back into it, started to have a few more chances. But for the first half an hour of that second half, it was Sporting controlling play. And Elie is at the very focal point of this Sporting KC system in that regard.
And Elie did have assists on both goals. Now, the first one, I think we pretty much put that down to Daniel Shalloway. It was just a phenomenal shot and finish on the curler by Daniel Shalloway as he sticks it to his dad for the videos there. But the second one was Elie picking out a Gerso streaking down the field and getting the pass off in time to keep him onside, which replays did indicate. And so at the end of the day, he punished them once they had to put their numbers forward as well. And Sporting get the 2-0 victory. Now it's on to Minnesota United and a chance to get back-to-back road victories. I think that's how you have to look at this opportunity going up to Minnesota for Sporting KC. Again, we'll talk more about that with Cal Williams here in a little bit. But once again, Carter and I are out here at Pinnacle, the ribbon-cutting ceremony for Sporting Kansas City and the United States Men's National and Women's National Teams. Amazing complex here in Kansas City, Kansas. We're going to talk with Jill Ellis, the head coach of the women's national team. What an honor it is for us to talk with her and president and CEO of Sporting KC, Jake Greed, in the next couple of segments coming up. It's a jam-packed show here on the Sporting KC show on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for Sporting KC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati along with Carter Augustine on a special day. We've basically spent the entire day here in Western Wyandotte County at the Pinnacle Sports Complex and, of course, at Children's Mercy Park, where earlier today a big announcement was made that the United States Women's National Team will be coming here this summer to play in a heck of a competition. They'll be playing Japan in the match here in a doubleheader, and we have the head coach of U.S. Women's Soccer, Jill Ellis, here, which is an honor as well. Jill, how are you? Thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. No, I'm excited and obviously happy to come back here. We love playing here and should be a good game, obviously, for the fans.
Yeah, we'll get to the competition here in a moment. Obviously, four major teams on the women's side playing here this summer, and you've got three sites in Kansas City. We're clearly very glad to be one of those. Tell me about your experience here and why you guys decided to come back to Kansas City.
Well, I think, you know, for the players, the field and the fans kind of two priorities, and you know the surface is always great. We usually get a great fan following. You know, and even the facilities within the complex are awesome. I mean, the locker room, and it's just top quality. So we're excited, and obviously be a great game against the team we played in the final.
Something we've been looking at a lot is the opening of this new Pinnacle National Training Complex. Did that go into your decision at all as well? Did you guys get a chance to look at that before you decided to come back to Kansas City for this tournament?
Well, I'd seen, you know, I'm not directly responsible for where we go and play, but I know for the people that are, they, having on-field sites to go and, you know, even the gym's amazing over there just to go and work out, and obviously training fields. I mean, the resources over there are tremendous, and I know the players will be excited to experience that.
So did you have a chance to tour the facility, and what maybe were your impressions if you did?
I did, and I mean, you know, in terms of resources for coaching education, obviously for the local community and obviously for the KC players, I mean, it's world class, and you know, the complex outside is beautiful, but I think just the level of technology in that place is kind of mind-blowing in terms of the things that they can do for athletes.
Sure. I want to jump ahead to the competition itself then. As Nate mentioned, three very accomplished teams. I think all three have already qualified for the World Cup in France as well. And the opener is against Japan, which will be the game here. And there's a great history between USA and Japan in the recent history as well. What are you looking forward to in this competition and specifically in this game against Japan?
Yeah, I mean, they are always just a tremendous opponent. You know, they just won their own qualifying. So I think last year we played them, and both teams were sort of in a reloading year. They definitely look, you know, further along in their process from where they were last year. They had a new coach. But they're always a very technical team, very challenging to play. And, you know, I think at this point for us, before we head into our own qualifiers later in the year, it's just so good for us to be tested. And this is a great team to do that.
When it comes to these teams like Japan, like Australia, you know, Brazil that are in the mix here, I'm curious, as you've seen the shifting landscape on the women's side of things. For a while there, I'm sure you've talked a lot about this, the women in the United States seem to have such a head start over everybody else. How much is the rest of the world starting to try to catch up to the U.S. as you look at the quality across the world right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think what, if you go back to the 91 when the first, it was basically China, Norway, and the U.S. And so I think we've actually been able to sustain since then. You know, teams like France, which have a great soccer culture, England, they've made, you know, tremendous investment in the women's game. They've got professional leagues now. So yeah, I mean, they have culture of soccer, and so you're naturally going to get the top athletes go into that sport. And you know, so now, I mean, on any given day, I think the top teams provide great opponents for us. And you know, I think we're still fine tuning and getting players back, but you know, I think it's going to be a tremendous tournament, this Four Nations tournament.
And you alluded to it as well. You have qualifying coming up in October. Is this the perfect kind of pre-qualifying tournament as well, with the quality of teams that are coming in?
It is, because, you know, when I asked them to put U.S. Soccer to put this tournament together, you really want to try and draw on very different styles, and that's what the three teams have. You know, in qualifying, you can see a team like Canada, and you can see a team like Mexico, Costa Rica, Trinidad. So everyone has sort of a different flavor to them in terms of their style of play. And for us to be exposed to all that in this tournament leading up into qualifying is key.
Now, you referenced that the last time these two teams faced off, both were in a bit of a reloading type of situation. How do you feel about where your team is right now along that process?
Yeah, I feel good. I mean, I think we've had a little bit of the injury bug this year. And so in terms of having our full complement of players all in together, that hasn't happened yet. But we've got players coming back, players getting healthy. So I think this tournament will really be probably the first time we get everybody back in terms of that. And then obviously the challenging thing is putting the players out there, because it's going to be so competitive, which I love. But I think we're going to be a very deep team.
I just want to talk about one player. I know you just mentioned you're going to get your full complement almost back. But one local girl just made her first cap, and she went to Nebraska as well. I'm a Nebraska alum, so I've been following along. What do you rate about Haley Hansen, and what led to her getting her first cap over the past couple of months?
Yeah, I think I saw Haley in with our under-23s, and then obviously she's turned pro, and I watched her in the games for the Dash. You know, Haley is she's a linking player, and she's got good vision, good mobility. You know, and I think for me, again, we're just trying to look at different pieces together in that midfield to see what the good blend is. But she's a very mobile player, and you know, I think she's got a good head on her shoulders in terms of how she sees and reads the game.
I knew Carter was going to go with the Husker question. I mean, anytime he gets an opportunity to ask somebody about Nebraska, he's going to do it. As we wrap things up, Jill, I just wanted to ask you about your excitement for next summer when it comes to 2019. You mentioned what a great site France is, what a great soccer culture they have. I still remember watching the World Cup there on the men's side back in 1998 and what an amazing turnout they had at all their venues there. How excited are you about that location and the World Cup next summer?
Well, it's going to be an amazing venue. I mean, I went to the Germany World Cup, and Europe, the European countries certainly do it right in terms of the venues and the support and the, you know, there's the promotion of the actual World Cup event. Not putting the cart before the horse, we got to obviously take care of qualifying, but I think it's a great venue because you really have a country that has had a pro league now for a long time. It's very established, and there'll be a fan base, which I think is ultimately, you know, what kind of makes the environment when you're a player.
Jill, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. We look forward to having the women here this summer at Children's Mercy Park.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, that is Jill Ellis from the United States Women's National Team, the head coach. They're coming to Kansas City. You got to make sure you get here for the Tournament of Nations Cup as Sporting Kansas City. This is the Sporting Kansas City show, by the way. But as United States Women's National Team will be taking on Japan here in Kansas City this summer. We'll take a break. Back after this with more on the Sporting Kansas City show on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Sporting Kansas City Show here on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Myself and Carter Augustine been out here at the Pinnacle Complex all afternoon and evening for a big day for both U.S. soccer, for soccer in Kansas City, and for this particular facility. We just, of course, had Jill Ellis, the head coach of the United States Women's National Team, as they're going to be coming to town this summer and playing at Children's Mercy Park. And now we're pleased to be joined by the president and CEO of Sporting Kansas City, Jake Reed, who's been a busy guy today. Jake, you've had a couple of different announcements, both the women's national team coming here this summer, and then the announcement that the Gold Cup will be coming next summer as well. And we hope, we'll keep our fingers crossed, that the United States will be one of those teams that's coming here as well. And you guys have the grand opening here tonight of Pinnacle. It's been a pretty busy, but I would imagine a really fun day for you as well.
Yeah, never going to complain about three huge announcements, but I think three is enough for today. But no, I mean, listen, all kidding aside, I mean, what a massive day for the region, for Kansas City. I mean, selfishly for us, this is why we built these things. And I think to be able to cast that international spotlight on Kansas City, Kansas is really what this is all about.
Well, let's start with one of them, the women's tournament. We heard from Jill Ellis last segment. She's really excited to come back to Kansas City. What are you most excited about being able to bring not only the U.S., but three really high quality women's teams here for that doubleheader in that women's tournament this summer?
Yeah, I think when you hear Jill talk about the importance of these games, this isn't a friendly for them. This is a tune-up as they're trying to qualify. These are meaningful games. Obviously, there's a history with the U.S. and Japan. We love these type of games. That's why we love the Gold Cup announcement, just like we love this. This is a true let's go, let's have fun. This is a game. This isn't a friendly that we're rolling the ball out there for. So, you know, I think anytime you can host any of the national teams, especially the one the U.S. on home soil, it's incredibly exciting. So we're thrilled. You heard Jill. She loves coming here. The players love coming here. And she referenced the stadium atmosphere multiple times. So, yeah, we're excited to put on a great show this summer.
Okay, this is the part where, as a kid who was born and raised in KCK, I always pinch myself a little bit. Ever since I've been coming to these games that this stadium has been built, look, I'll be honest with you. When I was a kid growing up in KCK, there was nothing. There was no reason for someone outside of Kansas City, Kansas to come visit here. And I say that as a guy who's incredibly proud to be from this town. But seeing what has come up here, I pinch myself. But it also makes me want to see us do well, you know, want to show out for the nation, have a good crowd, have a good experience and everything. And I'm curious for you, now that whole World Cup bid on the men's side is out there and we're hoping Kansas City will be part of the bid as well. How important is this? I mean, how important is it for us to put our best foot forward, both as a Sporting Kansas City organization, but as a community of soccer fans? Will we be watched, so to speak, when a game like this comes to town this summer?
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, anyone who says differently is kidding themselves, right? I think, first of all, we want a packed house every time we open the doors here. There's no, it doesn't matter if it's Sporting Kansas City match, if it's a women's game, if it's the men's national team, we don't care. If we want a full 20,000 in here going crazy, I think it's a pounding of the chest for our ownership group, for the region, and for KCK specifically. But yeah, to the World Cup question, all this matters, right? I mean, these are national teams that are coming in. We're in the process. We're one of the eight cities left in the Gold Cup side that are in the United bid. So yeah, I mean, the Tournament of Nations matters to have a full house, and then certainly next summer the Gold Cup will matter to have a full house as well.
You alluded to it, and it was something that Jay Berhalter started off with, saying you want every game here to be a full house. But he alluded to the respect that they have for what the ownership yourself have done for the soccer culture here in Kansas City. Was that good to hear that confirmation from Jay Berhalter? Although I suppose getting this tournament in itself is confirmation of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd said even before that, confirmation is I think we've still hosted the most national team games in this venue since we opened in 2011 of anywhere in the country. So I think that speaks volumes to, one, the relationship with U.S. soccer. But more importantly, these aren't gifts that we get from them, right? I think these are things when they look here, is competitively, is there an advantage for the U.S.? The answer is absolutely yes, if you've been to any of the matches here. And secondly, I think there's just a confidence that they know what they're getting. It's a great facility. It's going to be in world-class condition. The fans are fantastic. So, yeah, I mean, listen, anytime we get these, it's more confirmation. And certainly to hear Jay say that is very gracious of him. And we're humbled to hear those comments from U.S. soccer. But ultimately, I think the history we've had here at the stadium speaks for itself.
We're visiting with Sporting Kansas City President and CEO Jake Reed, and we've talked about now the two big events that are coming to Children's Mercy Park, but here at the Pinnacle Complex tonight as well, the grand opening of this facility. Look, you've got U.S. soccer here. MLS Commissioner Don Garber has been here as well. And I guess I'm curious, when you guys take these people on tours of the place, when you show them what has been built here, what are you most excited to show them? What is it that you want to make sure that they see and appreciate when they come to this place?
Yeah, I mean, the attention to detail, I think, is really important. You heard Jill talk about it a little bit there with, listen, we sometimes on the business side get obsessed with all the cool, shiny things, right? And Jill said the most important thing is I want a playing surface that's as good as the stadium. And she said it is. So I think for us, we tried to make sure that whether it's the field that they're out there on, whether it's the locker rooms that they're training and getting ready in, whether it's the pre-training stuff they're going through or the post-training rehab, we want all of those to be in line with what the needs are for the athletes. Does it make their life easier when they're here? Because ultimately that's what it's really about. We don't want them to have to feel like they're going out of the way for anything. And ultimately just the facility speaks for itself. I think when you walk in and see the attention and level of thought that was put into it, it's hard not to be impressed.
So this tournament with the women will be the first real run out in terms of hosting four international teams. I know there will have been plenty of coaching courses and the like, and there'll be plenty of bodies going through. But are you excited to kind of break the egg there or break the bottle of champagne on the edge of the ship and really test it out in terms of hosting four big time programs?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's going to be a challenge having four people in, right? But I think we built it with that in mind, knowing that these were the type of events that we wanted to get. And ultimately, it's no different than when we opened Children's Mercy Park in 2011, right? We want everyone to come in. We want you to have a great time. We want you to leave and go shout from the rooftops how unbelievable that was. And that's what the national teams will do. They're going to leave and talk about this facility in Kansas City, Kansas, and it's the best that they've ever been to, and they can't wait to go back. And then I think that word will spread. And ultimately, I think, when you ask Jay about what is the intent to bring the teams here on a regular basis, we like to bet on ourselves, right? And I think we like to bet that, although they don't have plans to do that, to be clear, I think it's going to be hard for the coaches to come here and the players to come here and be like, you know what, we don't really want to go back. So we feel really confident that once they're here, they experience it, they go through it, that you'll see that trend continue to come back here.
Okay, so for those that don't know, let's say, for example, this Tournament of Nations happens here later this summer on the women's side. You've got four national teams here. Will they all be occupying Pinnacle at the same time? Will they all be using the facilities out there? How do you envision that actually working out?
Yeah, no, it's a scheduling issue, right? So I think you'll see, I mean, don't forget, Sporting Kansas City is still going to be training out there as well. So let's just call it five teams. Our ops guys will be busy on the scheduling side, but ultimately, as one team is wrapping up, we'll have another team getting ready. We've got the locker room, so they don't have to wait for them to physically come in, mm-hmm. change, get out. So the teams can be in there. It's just a matter of like off the pitch, on the pitch. So it'll work. It's fine. That's why we've got smart people to coordinate all those things. But you'll have just kind of a scattered amount of training. So if you're into watching soccer training, it should be a pretty fun time because you'll have a full day for that week of the tournament.
I will say that's one of the things that stood out to me when Peter took us on a tour of it right off the bat is the seamless flow, the way that everything directs each different locker room on and off the training pitch. They can basically be in the same facility without even almost coming across one another.
Yeah, and that was the intent, right? I mean, you got to think through these from the coach. coaching side too, right? Jill's not going to want the Japanese team hanging out watching while we're finishing up our training, right? And vice versa. So I think part of this is, you know, we've got them in there. They're staged as soon as one nation finishes, the other one goes on, and then, you know, we just continue that flow. So, you know, it was designed for this, and we're excited to trial it out. I'm sure we're going to learn a lot when we do it for the first time, but ultimately I think that's what will make us better when we get ready for the Gold Cup in 19.
The benefits for the Kansas City soccer community hosting these tournaments, I think, is pretty obvious. Do you see any benefit in having Pinnacle in terms of on sport in Kansas City, maybe more specifically with the Gold Cup? Is it a good recruiting tool perhaps for these players that come in, or how do you see having these international teams coming in for these tournaments and how it affects sport in KC?
I think it's huge, right? I mean, you've got world-class athletes coming in, some of which are either playing in our league already, some of which who we may be looking at to come here, or some of which who have no idea about our league, and then they're going to see this and be like, wow, that's a place that I want to go. Listen, we're aware of the battle of the Midwest, right? You get, you know, everyone wants to go to the coast when you get these big names coming in. I think Peter's done an amazing job of breaking down that barrier. And you guys know this. Once you get them here and see this, I would put us against anywhere. So, yeah, absolutely. When you have these teams in, when their agents are in, when the national team coaches are in, all those things matter, because when they leave, they're talking about us to their other teammates at the club level. The agents are talking about it to other guys they're representing. All those things make a huge, huge difference.
We're visiting with Jake Reed, and Jake, we've talked a lot about the teams that will be coming to Pinnacle this summer and next summer, hopefully, obviously, continuing on. We talked about the national teams, and as you said, Jay mentioned earlier that, look, this might not be the only place that they train, but we're hoping to make them want to come here as often as possible. But the thing that stands out to me is every time Carter and I are out there getting ready to do interviews with sporting players, there's a different coaches seminar that's taking place. You're teaching referees there. There's youth-level teams and everything. So maybe for also those that don't know, if they just see it as, well, this is where the national team trains, this place seems like it's going to be busy all the time.
Yeah, I mean, the intent of this facility at its very core was to centralize all the coaching, training, and development. And that's working. They're going to be out there 250 days out of the year, right off the get-go. So that's a massive number of folks coming through. You layer on top of that Sporting Kansas City out there, and then you layer on top, you know, you've got all the youth teams for the National Federation. You've got the women's team. You've got the men's senior team. But at the end of the day, the biggest volume is the coaches and the referee training that's taking place out there. And ultimately, if you remember the why, when we asked this question of why are we going to do this, it was to help grow the game, support the game, and ultimately put our players in a better position a decade from now to continue winning World Cups on the women's side and to win one on the men's side, and that really starts with coaching.
All right, Jake, before we wrap this thing up, I can't let you get away without, you know, tooting your own horn a little bit about this Sporting Kansas City team, top of the Western Conference right now, and the only team with more points is a team that happened to lose at home to Sporting KC and Atlanta United last week. How do you feel about the way the season started so far?
Yeah, I mean, thrilled, right? You got a bunch of new guys who you don't really know how the season starts off. I think it would be very realistic to think, hey, it's going to take time for these guys to mesh and come together. Obviously, that didn't take very long. It's unfortunate that Felipe's out right now, but I think I'd rather have that happen earlier in the year than late. I think just the form overall is amazing. We had some defensive struggles early in the year, which not surprising to anyone. Peter fixed pretty quickly, and you saw that from Tim in Atlanta. But ultimately, listen, first place at any point in the year is never something to complain about, but ultimately it's a long season, but we feel really, really good about the team right now.
Well, Jake, thanks so much for the time. Congratulations on all three of the big announcements here tonight, and it's onward and upward.
Yep, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, that is Jake Reed, President and CEO of Sporting Kansas City. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk some Sporting KC soccer with Cal Williams, former voice of Sporting Kansas City, now the voice of Minnesota United, and Sporting KC play at Minnesota, so we're going to preview that matchup next as we come back on the Sporting Kansas City Show right here on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Sporting Kansas City Show right here on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, as we wrap things up and look ahead to the big matchup this weekend in Minnesota, Sporting Kansas City visiting Minnesota United. Nate Bucati and Carter Augustine with you, and joined by an old friend, former voice of Sporting Kansas City, current voice of Minnesota United. You know him well. It's Cal Williams on the line with us from Minnesota. Good evening, Cal. How you doing, man?
Nate, Carter, good evening. Lovely to hear your voices again. I'm really looking forward to the game this weekend.
Well, we are too, and let's talk about it. Two teams that are kind of going through opposite moments right now. I know it's been a rough stretch for Minnesota United over the past month or so. Sporting KC flying high at the moment, but all three of us have been around this league long enough to know that it doesn't take long at all for those types of things to change in a hurry. Tell us what the atmosphere is like around Minnesota United right now on the heels of three straight losses.
Well, as you mentioned, Nate, it's obviously a league that can be turned around very quickly. It could be very easy for us to sit here and quibble and be very frustrated with what has happened over the last couple of weeks. But the simple fact of the matter is that it all comes down to a lot of individual mistakes. I think for the most part, the actual starting 11, or at least the majority of them, are doing everything they're supposed to be doing and are in the right positions at the right time. And as a unit, they're actually operating quite well. I must admit, I've never seen a team that has been drenched in so much bad luck within such a short amount of time. And that, I know that may sound like I'm making excuses, but I mean, the injury list alone is just something to behold. Over the 18 months that Minnesota United have been in Major League Soccer, there was a stage last season when Adrian Heath would peer down the bench when Minnesota United were, you know, struggling. They were 1-0 down, 2-0 down at home, and he needed an option of some sort. And, you know, he would see three or four old NASL players on the bench, or he would see one or two players on the bench that simply weren't good enough for this level. I think last year was a tremendous learning curve for this franchise, and I think a lot of the mistakes that were made last year have been mended in 2018. But even this year, that they've been dealt with just a terrible dose of luck, and even the injury list here this season as well. And, you know, the likes of Abu Dunladi and Tyrone Mears have been in and out of first-team contention because of little niggling injuries. We've, of course, got the main three injuries, which have caused all sorts of problems from a lineup perspective. Kevin Molino and Ethan Finley now out for the rest of the campaign with ACL tears, and Sam Cronin as well has concussion issues, which have been well-documented throughout the league as well, and now Mark Birch is out for the rest of the campaign. So if you look at that picture, if you look at the starting 11 with all those players on it, it's a lot stronger than what it is at the moment. Now, what I will say is, because Minnesota United can still compete, and they are competing to a certain extent, it is a tremendous credit to the depth and the squad that the likes of Adrian Heath and Manny Lagos have put together. But the simple fact of the matter is, chaps, we all know it needs to be better for Minnesota United.
And I do want to correct myself, Carter, real quick. I said three straight losses. Two straight losses for Minnesota United is the accurate number. They did have two straight wins before that, as they come in seventh place right now.
Cal, first of all, you know, have you heard of the ratings for the Sporting KC show since you left?
I hear they've quadrupled. Is that correct?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, it went from 1 to 4 because my dad and Carter's parents are both listening now.
That's true.
There we go.
Just talking about the team really quickly, I think an interesting thing that has developed this year is the position up top. Where do you see the number 9 position for the Loons, and where Christian Ramirez in particular, is he going to be a starter? Is he coming off the bench? Have they figured that out yet?
That's a $1 million question, Carter. No one seems to know at the moment. And Adrian, he did say a couple of weeks ago that he needs so much more from his center forwards. Christian Ramirez has only scored twice so far this campaign, that the last one coming against San Jose in a 3-1 loss last weekend. And Abu Dunladi, his season hasn't really started, as I mentioned. He's had a couple of injuries here and there, as has Christian Ramirez, really. He got an ankle injury in the opening game at San Jose, and I think that was a little worse than people originally thought. So that's halted his development a little bit as well. And look, we all know there's only so much you can really ask of a 19-year-old who last year was playing high school football. You know, it's too much, in my opinion, to ask of a 19-year-old unless you are ridiculously talented. Now, Mason Toy is very raw. He's quick, he's athletic, energetic. He's got a lot of tools that you would want for a centre-forward. But in my opinion, it's too much to ask of him at the moment. I think he moving forward, the perfect role for him would be to come off the bench and make an impact as a sub, and you know, be slowly introduced to the professional game, because you know, this isn't the level of football where you can just, you know, turn and face and go and beat four or five people as he was doing in high school just a year or so ago. You know, this is Major League Soccer, and it takes much more to beat a backline in this league. So the one thing which I will say, the front line at the moment, I think they're all trying to figure out how to play with Darwin Quintero. Yeah. He's been the main player that has come in and really grabbed this team by the scruff of the neck. And, you know, we all know, we've seen him in the CONCACAF Champions League for many a year, mm-hmm. Knocking out MLS teams with Santos Laguna and Club America. He's a different level. He really is. But the plan was, as I mentioned earlier on, it was to have Quintero underneath the center forwards with Molino and Finlay either side. Now, if you look at it from that point of view, that's not a bad attacking quartet, yeah. If you think of Ramirez or Dunlady up front. That's not too bad at all in this league. But it's just been unfortunate for Minnesota United and for Adrian Heath that they've endured so many injuries. And I think at the moment, it just seems, you know, looking ahead to this game, it's a case of Minnesota United enduring while Sporting Kansas City are enjoying.
Well, I wanted to ask you specifically about Quintero because, like you said, we've been watching him for a long time, been a big fan of his, just a really fun player to watch. What impact has he made on this team in the short time that he's been there?
I think he's raised the level, Carter, particularly in training. People have to be at a certain standard now. They have to be at a certain level. And not that that wasn't the case before. Adrian Heath holds his players to a very, very high standard. But it's been difficult. There's no doubt about it. Quintero is, I'd like to use the word maverick, because he doesn't seem to care what people think of him. The first game that he played, I remember we arrived at the airport in Portland, and all of a sudden we heard this music blasting, and we were all assuming that there was a music malfunction in the airport somewhere or something, and you know, they must have got something wrong with the speakers or whatever. But no, it was Darwin Quintero with a boombox walking around the airport in Portland, blasting whatever the music was, just having a grand old time, just enjoying himself. And I just, you know, I just love that about him. You know, I understand why people would find that arrogant and slightly distracting and annoying, but I'm the other way for this. You know, for a team who is in need of someone like this, in need of a character, I think it's perfect for Minnesota United. And I just got that feeling that he just didn't care what people thought of him. And he was walking around saying, look, this is me. If you don't like it, that's your problem. But I'm here to do a job. I'm here to lift this football club. And that's exactly what he's done.
We're visiting with Cal Williams, the voice of Minnesota United. Of course, Sporting KC taking on Minnesota United at 1 o'clock on Sunday. You can watch the game on Fox Sports Kansas City Plus or on the Fox Sports Go app. You can listen to it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as well. And I wanted to go back to that forward position with you, Cal, real quickly, because you mentioned both Dunlady and Ramirez, and the fact that Ramirez, boy, I thought it was a beautiful goal that he scored against San Jose. I love your call, by the way. Ignore him at your peril, as you said. And that was a reminder of what he is capable of doing, although the form hasn't been there, and he seems like he'd fallen out of favor a little bit so far this year. I know that we saw this a little bit at times last year, but is there a place for both Dunlady and Ramirez on the field at the same time? Or is that one of the real challenges for Minnesota United right now, figuring out how to best utilize both of those guys?
That is a real challenge. It has been for a number of months, Nate. And knowing Adrian Heath the way that I do now after working with him for the last 18 months and having worked with Jamie Watson, our on-field analyst who played with Adrian Heath at Orlando City, at Austin in 2009, and he knows him very well, and I am convinced that Adrian Heath won't change this system. He may tweak it slightly to a 4-3-3 from time to time, but I just can't see him going to a 4-4-2 or you know, even a system where you have the two central midfielders that lie much deeper and you have the wide players really wide. You know what I mean? I just mm-hmm. can't see him doing that. Could he be a little more experimental? Yes, of course he could. Every football coach around the world could. But I just think Adrian Heath is sticking to his guns here. I know he likes Ramirez. I know he likes Dunlady. But the one thing that Adrian Heath has preached more than anything during his time at Minnesota United is competition. He didn't feel as though there was enough of it, particularly in 2017. But the one area where there was in that front line. And as I said earlier on, mate, he's demanding so much more of his centre forwards, and quite rightly so as well. You know, Ramirez did well, in my opinion, in his first ever foray into Major League Soccer in 2017 with 14 goals. And if you think about it, with all due respect, he did that without any real number 10 behind him, without mm-hmm. a proper creator. You know, Molino slotted in there and did well because he knows that he can play there. Is it his natural position? Well, that's a debate for another day. But I think with Quintero behind, whoever the centre-forward is moving forward this year, if they get themselves going, if they start to understand Quintero's game and what he wants to do, I see there being no issue moving forward.
Well, Cal, in talking to the Sporting staff and players this week, they're well aware of the danger that Minnesota possesses, especially at home, considering they went there twice last year and just picked up one point. And what they pointed to was the collective identity that they think Adrian Heath's teams play with in terms of the intensity and the pressure that they play. And they think he has really well-organized teams, especially at home. Do you agree with the assessment that the Sporting staff has seen in this Minnesota team?
Yeah, I saw the comments from Peter Ramiz on the Sporting KC website. And look, I agree. You know, Adrian Heath has got a very well-organized side. The key thing here, though, Carter, is he has a very well-organized side when he has the players to do it. Now, that has been an issue during his time at Minnesota United. I think they're getting stronger. I think they're getting better month after month when they're getting used to each other. Make no bones about it. In the summer window, there will be activity for Minnesota United as well. For me, there's a glaring need for a holding midfielder. The back line at the moment is coming under scrutiny. And look, quite rightly so, because there have been some woeful individual errors. Francisco Calvo, who is going to the World Cup with Costa Rica, he's a fabulous centre-back, but he's out of form right now. And the pitchforks are out for him here in Minnesota. There's no doubt about it. I can see why, but we've seen him when he is at his peak and when he's good and when he's playing well. And in my opinion, he's one of the better defenders in Major League Soccer. But the issue is here, chaps, is that Minnesota United haven't been able to protect that back line enough. Rasmus Schüler, I'm not convinced, is a number six. I think he's more of an eight and a box-to-box. He certainly has the energy for it anyway. And Ibsen, the player alongside him, he's 34 years of age. He's played in the Champions League with Porto and Spartak Moscow and played at the very, very highest of European football and in Brazil as well with the likes of Flamengo. He's been there, done it, and gotten the T-shirt. But he's 34. There's only so much you can expect from someone like that. He's quality. He can pick out a pass that you can't even see several passes before. He's wonderful. But he's not a holding midfielder. He's playing as a deep-lying playmaker, which I understand why, because he can see the rest of the field. I understand that. But what happens is he gets caught out from time to time, particularly on turnovers. He hasn't got the pace to get back. I think moving forward, there's a young Brazilian midfielder who Minnesota have on loan from Fluminense called Maximiano Luis Fernandez, who I think has plenty of energy. He knows the game well. He's just had a bit of an issue fitness-wise since he's arrived. And, you know, he only did his ACL in June of last year. He was playing a bit of football in the Fluminense reserves in January, and he's taken a bit of time to get himself used to Major League Soccer and the speed of it. He played about 64 minutes at LAFC. But I think moving forward, I wonder, is that an option for Minnesota United? If not, they may very well dip their toes in the transfer market. But the real thing which I'm interested in on Sunday, chaps, and you will know this better than most, in my opinion, and I know last year on the road wasn't exactly spectacular Sporting, but after years of watching Sporting Kansas City, it was clear, wasn't it, that when teams came to Children's Mercy Park, they packed it in because they knew exactly what Sporting were going to do. So in my opinion, I think Sporting KC play the better football on the road. And I think both teams are going to be very, very open on Sunday afternoon. I think we could be in for quite the contest.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. And thanks for the really in-depth look at Minnesota United, Cal. That's really helpful for everyone to listen to that. But most importantly and lastly, are you ready for Liverpool to be champions of Europe? And what are you thinking, Aston Villa versus Fulham in the playoff final to move up to the Premiership? You like the Villa's chances?
I see we save all the important subjects for the last moment. there's no doubt about it. I mean, look, as an Englishman, I will always cheer for the English side in the Champions League.
Okay.
It's not going to be easy. We all know that. It's not going to be easy. But I will always cheer for the English side in the Champions League final. From an Aston Villa point of view, look, it has been a putrid last 2 years being an Aston Villa fan. We have had an absolute myriad of bad luck, a plethora of decisions go against us, an unwavering last 18 months where it's just been absolutely awful. And I just think, you know, we got ourselves into the playoffs after a good run. We managed to go, I think it was something like 12 games unbeaten, and that really helped us, and for a while we got ourselves into second, and I thought maybe we can sneak in. But look, nevertheless, the Championship is a brutal league, and congratulations to Wolves and Cardiff who have done it. But against Fulham, it's no easy task. I'm fearful of the little lad Sessegnon Young up front who continues to amaze and raise the eyebrows. So look, I'm used to heartbreak. I'm an Aston Villa fan. I'm an England national team fan. So we'll wait and see.
Well, it's certainly going to be a fun final. Big matches, the FA Cup final we still have coming up. We've got the Championship playoff final, and we got the Champions League final as well, and then it's on to the World Cup. But more importantly for us locally, it's Minnesota United versus Sporting Kansas City on Sunday at 1 o'clock. Cal, make sure you take good care of our young Carter Augustine up in Minnesota, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks a lot for the time, man.
Cheers, chaps. Appreciate you. Have a good show.
All right, that is Cal Williams, and that's it for our show. So our thanks to Jill Ellis, head coach of the women's national team for the United States here today at Pinnacle, and Jake Reed, president and CEO of Sporting Kansas City, and our good buddy Cal Williams as well. We'll see you next time right here on the SKC Show.